What do you mean the plankware got them again? Welcome back to Motorsport 101. It beats my other alternate title name of What Verstappen's in Vegas Stays in Vegas. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 630 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighbourhood host, Dre Harrison. I'm here all week. Please do not try the veal. We are in the final stretch of the 2025 Formula 1 season. As I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, do you know how depressing it was to have Brazil be a genuinely fun race once again and then sit back and realise, oh shit, we still have three more of these to go. It's just like, oh, for God's sake. And then realize we got Qatar this weekend as well. We're racing a fucking MotoGP track again. Oh, for the love of God.
25 lap stint limits because the curbs are still too jagged for these Pirelli F1 tires that they've not figured out a solution to build better tires for the track. I don't know. It's all a mess. But that's not what we're here to talk about this weekend. No, Dre, it's not.
No, it's not. But we'll be talking about that a little bit later on as well, because we might do a little sneaky Qatar preview before we get out of here, because we normally do when we wrap up the show anyway. My other alternate intro would have been guaranteed to have a better launch than Project Motor Racing was. Here's Cameron Buckley.
yes, I would have voted for Max Verstappen cashing in the money in the plank briefcase.
Very good. Very good. Well done, Cam. You can have that one.
Yes.
Very good.
What do you mean another Ian Bell game came out and it's exactly like all the other Ian Bell games?
You know, there's just too many unfinished simulation racing titles on the market these days.
I think this one was hardly started.
Sounds like that game needed more QA and less QAnon.
Like, it does not matter about his political views as long as they are able to develop a decent sim racing game. What do you mean the sim racing game was terrible again?
Yes, don't hire Nazis to develop your games.
Yeah, I think that's generally good advice. Don't hire Nazis to do anything, quite frankly.
Other than get punched. Yeah.
Punching, we should do that with racists more often, quite frankly, to be honest with you. These are all very bold and controversial opinions here on Motorsport 101, and we're barely 4 minutes in. Aren't we just delightful? Right, we'll talk about the Las Vegas Grand Prix, round 22 of the Formula One World Championship over the next hour and change or so, because we have a lot to get through. Max Verstappen winning the Las Vegas Grand Prix ahead of Lando Norris and George Russell, or so we thought, until a massive, potentially title-altering story to come out at 7 in the morning on Sunday alongside a McDonald's McMuffin for the inevitable breakfast orders if you stayed up till 4 in the morning to watch that in the UK. It's, McLaren, both of them, tossed due to excessively short planks. And we'll see what impact that has on the championship and the rest of the season so far very, very shortly. We'll talk about Mercedes and its surprise double podium as a result of that McLaren double DQ. Yet more Ferrari malaise. Stop us if you've heard that one before on this show in the last couple of months. The general vibes around Vegas in general, I think, is worth talking about. We'll also talk about the big breaking news story of today as we record this on Wednesday, November 26th. Yes, we didn't miss one for once in a recorded schedule. We got it on the nose. Thank you very much, Aston Martin. We're very grateful for you. Adrian Newey, for the first time in his career, officially is a team principal at Aston Martin. Bang! We'll talk about that later on in the show. The F1 Academy gets a mention as Dorian Pan becomes their third series champion to wrap up 2025. And, of course, talk a little bit about Qatar as well and the permutations towards... Well, people are getting really excited for this title fight, yet Lando Norris is a 4-1 favourite to win it all this weekend. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But places you can find us in the meantime, of course, you can find us on our website, motorsport101.com, with all of our social media on there. If you want to find us specifically, we're on Blue Sky, Dre Harrison, RJ O'Connell, and cbuckley917.bsky.social. We're on Twitter, if you must, as a podcast, motorsport_101. If you want to follow us for some video highlights of the show, you very much can do so on our Instagram page, Motorsport101Pod, and our TikTok account, M101_podcast. Follow them on there for highlights of the show and monologues from yours truly on F1 news, reviews, all that good stuff as well, because who doesn't love bonus content? If you want to read more, some more thoughts on Vegas and what have you, you can do that on our website, of course. Check the blog section, motorsport101.com, for all reviews on Vegas. And our MotoGP season review series continues. Part 2 will be out on Friday, November the 28th. And part 3 on December the 2nd. Aprilia and KTM will be in part 2, and Ducati and all their nonsense. And trust me, there is some nonsense, will be in part 3. The whole thing turned out at about 12,500 words. I had a lot to say on this one, so do check that out if you'd like a good old-fashioned Dre long-form read. Enjoy for your reading pleasure. And of course, if you're really lucky, so you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Jason and Ghost Raptor are doing so in the chat as we speak. Thank you for the continued support, gentlemen. Also, do not forget, Motorsport 101 live ballots are still available until December the 14th.
The M101 Awards, baby.
If you want to leave it till after the season is over, completely understandable. You've got till December 14th. You've got an extra week after Abu Dhabi's finished. But just a quick reminder, you can send in your ballots right now if you are comfortable enough. If you want to change anything, by the way, just get in touch with Jason_Poland somewhere on the internet. You can't miss him. He's literally a shuckle. Again, that's going to need some explaining if you don't listen to the show on a regular basis, or if you're not in our Discord server. But just trust me on this one, okay? Just take my word for it. Right, enough of me plugging the shit out of ourselves for the last 3 minutes. Let's get into the 2025 Las Vegas Grand Prix.
What Verstappen's in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Aw, boo.
I didn't write it.
I did. Blaine unashamedly.
Well, let's sum this up. It was a crazy weekend in terms of climate, combining the classic Vegas desert cold in November with some rain. We had a little bit of rain on Friday, and then a lot of rain for qualifying on Saturday. I can't believe it, fellas. We got extreme wets for a whole session.
Yeah! Damn, that's crazy. Woo! And out of all of this... all of this, and the result was still predictable, as Lando Norris qualified on pole over Max Verstappen, but in a dry race on Sunday, Lando overcorrected. He blocked heavily into turn one off the start, dropped to third behind Max and George Russell, and the Dutchman took off into the distance. Norris eventually got back in a second after George Russell suffered all weekend with a power steering issue, but after claiming they could get Max, Norris had no answer for Verstappen, as the Dutchman took career win number 67 plus 2. And he reduced the championship deficit to 42 points. Or, Dre, so we thought.
So we thought. A post-Parc Fermé inspection for McLaren showed excessive plank wear beyond the normal limit of 9 millimeters on all four of the corners where they measure these things. McLaren were referred to the stewards. McLaren claimed that the lack of practice time due to the changeable conditions led to them not knowing how to set the car up properly. And, the steward said, sorry, we don't do mitigations for technical regulation breaches. Double disqualification for both Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri. Norris had two of the measuring points of his plank under the 9mm limit. Piastri had three, as a matter of fact. As a result, with both cars being tossed, it meant a double Mercedes podium. George Russell gets bumped up to second place, and Kimi Antonelli, who, by the way, went 48 laps on a set of hard tyres, holding off Oscar Piastri and Charles Leclerc behind him for as long as he dared, ended up in third. So, with just two rounds to go in the standings, remember, Qatar is a sprint weekend this weekend, so an extra 8 points available, 58 in total left to play for. Lando Norris's championship lead has been reduced to just 24 points. Oscar Piastri is still second, but only on countback over Max Verstappen in third, both 24 points behind Lando Norris on 366. Remember, Piastri has 7 wins to Verstappen's 6. hence why Piastri's ahead on countback. We'll get into more of the title winning permutations at the end of the show, but that's the scores on the doors with two rounds to go. Safe to say, there's a lot to talk about here.
Remember when we didn't have any plankware disqualifications for 30 years and then London bus analogy happens?
We've had five cars tossed for this now in the last 3 years. It's wild that this keeps coming up. I mean, with the ground effect era being what it is, you're going to take as much liberty as you think you can get away with by having your car as low to the ground as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think that's safe to say that's where McLaren's gone wrong. I mean, we'll go to our technical expert, Cameron Buckley, for more at the hour.
Where do you want me to start here?
The McLaren plankware situation. I mean, obviously, just
put
not
the fries
ideal.
In the bag, McLaren. Just put the damn fries in the bag. I'm tired of this. It's McLaren when it comes to making this championship harder than it needs to be, and it's just the LeBron James edit.
From you know St. Vincent St. Mary's High School in Akron, Ohio, etc., etc. I mean, it didn't even really look like they were. First of all, Lando, I don't understand. Like, I have been kinder to Lando Norris than a lot of people have on the show, and a lot of people listening to the show probably have.
I've tried.
I don't understand why he's needed to block that aggressively coming off the line into turn one and take that shallow line into a corner.
Yeah, it's like he got the hard bit done where he was able to block Max off the line. Max got a very marginally better start. And then it's like he forgot the turn one was there because he hit the brake and he just basically went straight with how shallow the line was.
He got spooked. He got spooked. I don't think a super aggressive Max lunge was coming on this one, mostly because turn one at Vegas is a notoriously sketchy corner. It's cold tires. You've been sat on the grid for the better part of a minute by the time the green lights go off. And it's so easy to go wide there, even wider than you normally should, because the racing line kind of facilitates you go wider because it's slightly banked, turn one, very, very slightly. And the natural race line is to go around the outside a little bit more. So I don't know what Lando was thinking, jolting to the inside and then taking the super tight, aggressive. I mean, you've got to brake deeper, brake harder, and you're more likely to just shoot the corner and just go straight on. It was asking for trouble. And honestly, I don't think a max lunge was coming because you can't really lunge it at turn one like that. He tried it a couple of years ago and he got dinged for it.
Yeah, Max takes the lead into turn one by doing nothing. Is how it played out. And not only that, Lando lost second place to George Russell. George Russell is putting in, like, the best season that you'll ever see 5 years from now on trivia.
It's going to be a fantastic pub quiz answer one day. Like who was fifth in the 2025 World Championship and just drove his nuts off the whole way through, and it will be George Russell.
Just not equipped. He's just not equipped to fight at the front with these other cars. But he's trying.
He had a couple of shots early on. I mean, again, if he had to try, it had to be early because of not only the fact that the Red Bulls were just better on their tires in this race compared to Mercedes were, but also, as mentioned, Russell had a power steering issue come up on Saturday during qualifying that it stayed around on Sunday as well. So I can't imagine how physically conducive it has to be when your power steering is not working in a 220-mile-an-hour Formula One car.
Yeah, it's the best way I can describe it is that it was very notchy. Like, it was almost locking as he was going through the right to left. So, unpleasant to drive. He also came out of the pits, took a shot at Max, and just goosed his tires and won, basically. And Max pretty much escaped up off the road. As far as McLaren were absolutely ridiculous in wet conditions the previous day.
Yeah. But Norris was 9 tenths up on Max through two splits of that final qualifying run. And I think Lando just went super conservative in sector three was on pole three.
Coming out of the final chicane.
Yeah. But he was a second up on his delta through 2.5 splits, which is just nuts.
Yeah, and just made a mistake and it was so far ahead it didn't even matter. But they threw something at the wall as far as their race setup. And we could see it during the race that they were bouncing and they were sparking down the straights big time. And Lando actually got the call over the phone 5 laps into the race to start doing lift and coast through the fast, flat corners.
What was that H-Bomber line about foreshadowing as a literary device, Dre?
Mm-hmm. His mother was very proud of him.
Trying to be a Ferrari with the way they were lifting and coasting. It wasn't enough. We thought this was fuel. We thought that this was fuel. As it turns out, it also was, because they also underfueled Lando.
Yeah.
Not quite as severely as the plank issue would have affected him. He lost 13 seconds in the final 3 laps. And yeah. We think, oh, he's just going to escape over the line. McLaren gets away with another catastrophic fuck-up at the end of a race to basically put Lando in complete championship control. Eh.
Wrong.
No, senor. Yeah. No, senor.
We thought they just about got away with it. We thought we were basically watching was, you know, Jamie Wincup at Barfest that one time where his radio's not working and he's realized he's in the shitter when it comes to fuel. And that's what I thought we were watching. And it turns out it was actually, no, far more catastrophic, not that we knew it at the time.
So who's playing Paul Dumbrell just staring off into space at the monitor as he sees his car get passed on the final lap?
Well, Joseph?
Probably Andrea Stella, most likely. He's too nice a guy for that sort of thing. From what I was told by someone within Biggin Hill, they were already risking it with the way their car was set up, and we'll talk about that in a little bit more detail in just a second. But from what I was told off the record, a couple of their sensors on both cars stopped working during that race. So they had to go into maximum conservative mode to make sure they got the planks home. And then that's one thing. What we didn't know, and credit to the race for reporting this, they were marginal as far back as Austin. Austin, we all know, is a notorious. I mean, we had Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc thrown out in 2023's American Grand Prix over excessive skid plane. Skid
never forget that point, baby.
Oh, yeah, the loins, but etc. Like we had them fred because Austin, for those who don't know, is a notoriously bumpy track. It's built on swampland. It's going to be uneven in some cases. They were apparently marginal in Brazil as well, because a lot of people don't know Interlagos was partially resurfaced this year, and that new surface was causing problems with cars on ride heights and making teams potentially be more conservative on where to set their car's ride height at to compensate for that. So, call me crazy here.
You're crazy.
Fair enough. I knew that already, but still. For me, McLaren, this is a statement to me that says McLaren is operating at its limit. Mm-hmm. They are...
Yeah. The thing is, with the way the McLaren is designed, is it's really designed for that great through-corner balance, that thing that Red Bull had in spades to start these regulations and then lost, you know, through last year. And it really took them until Zandvoort of this year with that clean sheet front wing they did, and then the new floor in Monza, to basically upend and fix the Red Bull's balance. The McLaren has had that all year, but it's not a raw downforce monster, despite how it might look out on track. It's built for better balance, and it sacrifices a little bit of peak load to get there. How do you get that peak load back if Red Bull is just giving you the business every other round like they were for about 4 rounds in a row? You lower the car, and you see what you can get away with. And it feels like McLaren are pretty much operating this car in its current state, because they did end development very early, as they were afforded to do so. They were afforded to be able to do that by how quickly they won this Constructors' Championship. But also, Red Bull hit, I'll use a mining term here, they hit a rich vein of development on the front wing. This front wing has been worth like half a second on that car.
It was... It's been berserk. I cannot exaggerate that this was a literal breakthrough development. It's like playing the F1 games, and it's an end of season upgrade that is like all of a sudden makes you 3 temps quicker. It is nuts that it is single handedly turned around Red Bull's entire season.
Me playing F1 2012 and I get 4 tire wear upgrades at once at Lotus, and suddenly I can one stop anywhere.
This is when you get that photo chat in like anyone.
Oh yeah. Like it's the anti one photo Chad on Balatro. It's like, yep, I'm just gonna smooth this run over on Gold Stake. It's been
an enormously valuable development, and the most important thing, it lets them slam the balance forward for Max, who we know likes the positive front end, without the rear trying to snap around. That helps your tire wear. That helps your speed. It means you can trim the car out more. And Red Bull, once again, not quite as good in qualifying. They blew the doors off everybody in race trim because we know McLaren was running the car illegally low.
Yeah, and again, that says to me that this is a McLaren team that's operating at its limit. It's now having to take a hellacious amount of risk to keep up with what Verstappen is producing right now. And they took one liberty too many, and the moment they had a minor car failure, they get punished. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a huge blow, because the parameters and the maths going into Qatar actually doesn't change all that much. Like, if Lando wins in Qatar, it's effectively over. It all boils down to how the sprint could play up on things. But in any case, the margin of error is a lot smaller.
Yeah, it's the simple math for everyone. If Lando outscores Verstappen or Piastri, because they're on the same amount of points, by 2 across the weekend, it's over. Mathematically ends. However, he had a spectacular championship point available in Qatar because it was more or less unassailable. Yeah. You've just lost maximum points in a weekend. To say nothing of Oscar Piastri, who just had another very anonymous weekend and is now at very deep risk of finishing 3rd in a 2-car title fight.
Now, can I ask something with regards to the Oscar Piastri burger promotion? That changed from, if Oscar finishes on the podium, you get this burger at this Australian joint, to if Oscar finishes, you get this burger joint. He finished on the road. He was disqualified. Does the promotion pay out still?
I don't know, because I'm not Australian. Should I give you some bookie's perspective on this?
Absolutely.
Because I've been asked about this before, because for those who don't know me, or maybe you're new to the show, because every show is somebody's first. I was a betting shop manager for 6 years, including William Hill and Paddy Power, and I can tell you for free, this is 100% true. Bookies take the podium as the final result. So, if you bet on an Oscar Piastri podium, for example, if you were to finish 3rd. You would get paid out as a winner, even though you would have been DQ'd afterwards, because they take the podium result as final. Now, for those who are wondering, well, why would they do that, Dre? Simple reason, people want their money. People want to get paid. They don't want to wait hours and then for the FIA to release an official classification. If there's stupid investigations, if there's Parc Fermé, like you said before, you don't want, if you're a gambler, you don't want to wait 6 hours after the result you think is official gets declared and you get paid. But you've got to draw the line somewhere. Mm-hmm. Many promotions will have a justice payout or a fair play refund if there's a result that gets altered, but that's obviously at their discretion. I'll give you an example. When the 2023 Belgian Grand Prix happened, sorry, the 24 one, and where George Russell crossed the line first but then was DQ'd later, certain bookies did still pay George Russell out as a winner as well as Lewis Hamilton. So they basically paid out 2 winners. That does happen, but fun fact for you, bookies take the podium as the final result. Yeah. There you go.
So if you cash in that burger promotion, you've already ate and you're worried at rest, do not worry. They will not make you regurgitate that burger.
Oh, thank God. They're not a cow.
Please, no. But yeah.
All seriousness aside, Oscar Piastri just had another weekend where he's just like a step behind Lando the whole time. 5th in qualifying, not really in the race.
It's just, he's... in a championship context, he's kind of going out sad.
I hate it, man. He looks so good this summer.
Even before the DQ, Piastri was anonymous in qualifying and in the race, and it would have been 7 straight without a podium for Piastri. Yeah, and that was before the DQ.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, like, it still is.
Yeah, I mean, it still is. I mean, of course, but you know what I mean, like on the road results and what have you. The point is, he's not
never
been,
looking like it.
He's not been on the podium since Zandvoort, the last race he won. Like, and again, he was the second best McLaren over the weekend. So that's what, 7 weekends in a row that Piastri's been second best to Norris. Like, this is
the last
now
one. Last one that he looked podium capable, probably Singapore throughout that weekend.
So. Yeah, but that's, I think that's fair. Look, this is. I don't necessarily want to call it a collapse, but it's hard not to call it a collapse when you're minus 104 against Max Verstappen in the last 7 rounds.
Max Verstappen did run that championship gap down. It's just that there's another gap to another McLaren. But if he did run the 104 down since Baku. Okay.
Well, you could put it in easier terms, right? Because, again, we love an NBA plus minus on this show. If McLaren's drivers are a combined entity, they're minus 80 against Max in the last 7 weekends. Minus 80. Like, the math says they will probably just about get away with this, but they are making life way too hard for themselves.
This championship should have been done for one of these 2 races ago. They should have had, if not wrapped up between themselves, this should have been done races ago.
I'm not saying
it is absurd to me that it is not. Not only that, let's remember, Dre, when Piastri completely blew Baku, Norris didn't really take any benefit out of it.
He was mediocre that weekend. He qualified in, you know, what was it, 9th place and then finished 6th, got stuck in a DRS train behind Tsunoda and I think it was, what, Liam Lawson that weekend. Yeah, he did not really punish Piastri too much for that mistake, more than what a 1-2 would have been if McLaren was at full song. I'm not saying Lando's
else.
Been... I'm not saying Lando's been perfect. He hasn't. He still had his fair share of minor errors here and there. But when it comes to execution, he's been way better than Piastri since the summer break. And that's with a technical DNF that cost him 18 points. Like,
could say that Lando Norris has that clutch gene. He shines bright when the lights are at their brightest. You could say that.
I mean, we could. Turn 1 would tell me otherwise, but this was going to be a not amazing but good enough weekend to put him into championship contention until McLaren botched the plank situation. Even if they didn't and they were more conservative and they were kind of just mid-table on points, the only thing that could hurt them going into this weekend was a non-score.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what they got. And the only thing that could really hurt him again is, again, just a non-score against Max, because it feels like McLaren are either going to get on the podium or they're going to have such a disastrous race that they don't score points.
And yet the math still has them as heavy favorites, which
that's
is the ironic thing, about it is like the bookies right now have Lando Norris as a 1-4 favorite. That is 80% implied probability by bookie language. I joked about this on video today on our social media channels that I was like, Sky Sports have broke out the special commercials for a freeway title fight with 2 rounds to go, even though in theory, you'd have, in my opinion, a better than coin flip chance Lando ends this on Sunday. I would still give him good value for the win this weekend. He's only a very slight underdog against Max. Bookie's language right now for you. Verstappen is 11-8 favorite to win in Qatar this weekend. Lando Norris is 13-8. It's very close. Like, you basically, they're saying it's a coin flip. And Piastri winning wouldn't really change very much either. And honestly, right now, he's
math
in
for Max.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, really, Piastri is in no form to be winning a Grand Prix right now the way he's been for the last 2 months, quite frankly.
Only saving grace is that this is where he got his first sprint win. So,
yeah. And he was gifted that because Lando gave it to him on the line as a make good for what happened in Hungary.
Never forget. Let's also not forget Max is undefeated there under these regulations in the Grand Prix. And the math for Max is simple. Go out and win and see what else happens.
You've got
There's nothing
to win.
Else he can do.
Realistically, if he wins, he's going to take a points gap probably of somewhere between maybe 15 and 18 points to Abu Dhabi. It would still be an omega long shot. But all you can do is win and rack up the pressure. And maybe you get a mistake somewhere. There won't be a floor issue this time, man, because Qatar's as flat as a pancake. But
if anything, it's going to be a tire issue. We'll get into that shortly.
For me, my overall point is McLaren is operating at 100% of its capacity now, and it has to, because anything less and Max is going to run them over. Now, they have to gamble, and they shouldn't be in this position where they feel like they have to gamble to keep the status quo. Really, Lando should just finish behind Max on Sunday, take it to Abu Dhabi with a 17 or 18 point lead, and just coast it home. But the fact that we're in this situation with McLaren that has blown that big a lead to get to this spot in the first place, I don't think people have a lot of faith in McLaren at this point. And the fact that people from as far back as Baku, when Max was 70 points out, was like, he couldn't, could he? Says a lot about where people's confidence and faith lies at the moment. And I'm telling you now, it's not in Woking.
And that's I don't think it's going to happen unless Kimi Antonelli decides to make good with Max for what happened in Austria.
Speaking of Kimi Antonelli,
well, we'll get to him in a second because were it not for Max, driver of the race, I digress.
Oh, easy.
Still might be driver of the race. But the fact that Max is probably on the math going to get this to the final round is absurd.
Miraculous.
There was a 7-race stretch where Red Bull had, I think, one podium. And that was when McLaren had just fell off a cliff in Canada. That is astounding to me. And it's going to be... It's might be better than last year, save maybe Spain.
The industrial-level head loss. Remember, they fired Christian Horner for that run. It was bad enough where the smoke got too big.
He was a dead man walking. He was a dead man walking as soon as the Thai side of the team lost the 2%. And the allegations, I don't think, ended up mattering worth a damn. I just think Austria wanted him out of that team.
More on that very soon. There's some other points from this race that are worth bringing up besides in it. Max was just fucking brilliant in the race. Again, he's just so goddamn good at this. Man has got a reasonable chance of leaving this season with 70 goddamn wins. And he's 27 years old. Like, what are we doing here? Like,
pretty good.
Like, it's that Sebastian Vettel quote that's done the rounds today. Like, the scary thing is he's getting better, and I agree. I think he is getting better. Like this might be as impressive as one of his world championship wins, despite the fact there's a good chance he doesn't win this title. Like, it's outrageous what he's doing in that car right now. We talked a little bit about George. We talked a little bit about Kimi. Ferrari.
Kimi Antonelli. No.
Yeah.
Put Ferrari on the back burner, just like this whole season has. Kimi Antonelli starts his race with a false start penalty because he was rolling ever so slightly. It wasn't even a jump. He basically failed to hold the brake, and because the straight is on an incline here, he moved just enough for the sensors to catch
him. Yeah, because I watched the onboard, and it didn't look like he moved at all, but I'm just thinking, like, they probably have seen something that we don't.
on the sensors.
Yeah, it's the sensors. They've got sensors in the grid boxes, so they know when someone's moved or not. I call it the Cal Crutchlow rule, because it's exactly the same in MotoGP. You can't roll before the lights go out. If you do, it's a slam dunk jump start. And in MotoGP, it's a double long lap penalty now if you jump the start. In Formula One, it's a 5-second time penalty. He's unlucky, given the nature of Vegas's grid, really. But you're right. I don't think he really gained an advantage by doing so, but... Yeah. Rules are rules.
5-second penalty that ends up not actually mattering, because he took a hard set of tires 48 laps. Your tires cannot legally degrade without your consent. And dude, he was so good at the end of that. He was so fast, because he was only a tenth or two off of Max that final stint for most of it. He actually pulled away from Charles behind. He put Charles out of that 5-second gap on just straight pace.
He had Piastri and Charles Leclerc on his ass for a good 20 laps of that race, and by the time they got to the final few laps, he'd broken them because they could not keep up with him after spending all that time in that dirty air goosing those tyres. Remarkable defensive performance from Kimi Antonelli. That was this kid is 18, and he just held off two of the fastest dudes on the planet for the whole back half of Vegas and didn't give them an inch. Superb. Superb performance. Yep. This is the Kimi that people were excited about. And rightly so.
He's getting there. He's getting as good as advertised.
Back-to-back podiums with two races to go. Only 15 points behind the man that he replaced in the standings, which was a daunting task, you know, when he jumped in for anybody, even if you are a five-star prospect like Antonelli. But man... That was a fun drive. I want to see more of it.
Yeah, that got most of the camera attention in the back half of the race, and rightly so. It was very fun.
Yeah, so much of it that we didn't actually see what ended up happening with Lando Norris when it looked like he was having a mechanical, because TV direction never actually bothered to change the cameras. Like, the worst TV direction since they cut to Lance Stroll at Monaco in 2021.
I don't know. They were worse this season, but it wasn't exactly great. It felt like they'd learned their lesson a bit after some of the stuff that they missed. Like, I think, was it Singapore? Yeah.
They learned their lesson. Terrible.
And then they, you know, just went back a bit.
Dre.
Mm-hmm. Is it time?
I'm going to pull up the deck chair. I'm going to crack a beer.
Oh, God.
And I'm going to let Dre do his thing for a couple minutes.
Oh, brother. Where do you want to start with this?
Like, I mean, with Ferrari at this point, I mean, I don't know how much of this is just classic Ferrari glory runs on Friday, but I had genuine faith that I thought Ferrari had a quick car coming off of Friday, and I thought maybe a podium is on here. Everything goes to plan. Nope! Lewis Hamilton qualified.
That was your problem. You had hope.
I still have too much hope in me, because Lewis Hamilton qualifies stone dead last, runs into a bollard on his final hot lap. Didn't even need Kevin Magnussen's help this time, like at Abu Dhabi last year. Qualifies dead last. Charles Leclerc is swearing his ass off when he's only, I think, what was it, ninth on the grid in Q3. Just a waste of Friday and Saturday. Yeah, they stink in the rain, and I do not know why for the life of me. Charles Leclerc again.
When is the last time Ferrari were good in the rain, dude? Like,
I can't remember. Even
in 2022, Red Bull carpet bombed them in Japan.
Oh,
like, and that was a good Ferrari, at least in the corners sometimes. Like, fucking
this.
They're so bad in the rain and have been for, like, it feels like half a decade.
And you know what was an insult to my intelligence? Watching the back end of that Grand Prix, seeing Lewis Hamilton with 10% of the driver of the day vote. Look, I'll describe Lewis Hamilton's race in as matter-of-factly a manner as possible here, right? He passed about six cars on the open, and it was all the dudes who ran wide at turn one during the start of that race.
Gabriel Bortoleto is a terrorist. I like because that boy, but he is a terrorist.
Because Bortoleto committed... Bortoleto went kamikaze into the side of Lance Stroll and caused like a 4-5 car pileup. coming out of that corner. Lawson had clunked into the side of Piastri as well. Got away with it under driving standards because it was deemed a lap one and George had locked up in front of him. It was a mess. Hamilton, like, is running 12th for a good chunk of this race. Spends about 20 laps trying to get past Esteban Ocon, right? And then when he does his one stop for the race and he's now on the medium tyre, he's going slower than Nico Hülkenberg is. On the same strategy.
In the Haas.
Nico Hülkenberg wishes he was in a Haas. He's in a Sauber.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Passive time is bullshit. And Nico Hülkenberg in Sauber.
Podium-worthy, like, Sauber, let's not forget. Look.
Listen. I'm not done here. This is rock bottom. Like, this feels like rock bottom right now, where Lewis Hamilton, after the race, said that he is not looking forward to next season right now. And look, a part of me understands that Lewis is the sort of guy who is very, you know, self-immolating when it comes to, he owns it. He will fully just set himself on fire if he's not having a good time and he'll know about it. Now, do not get me wrong. I still do not agree with what John Elkann had to say about this a couple of weeks ago, and his comments were, at best, the wrong way to motivate someone, and at worst, just completely off base. Lewis Hamilton is not helping the situation by talking about how miserable he is week to week. And don't get me wrong, I applaud the honesty. It's very rare that we, because I've been very cynical about Hamilton and the way he talks to the media sometimes, right? A part of me has this theory. Did John Elkann make these comments because he's starting to have buyer's remorse?
It kind of felt like when he said it, it was more targeted at Lewis Hamilton than Charles Leclerc.
I say this,
it felt
right,
like that at the time.
Yeah,
to an extent. At the same time, both, like, Lewis has been extremely vocal about the operational side of Ferrari, as we all have been. Charles has been very vocal about the technical side, because let's just call it what has Ferrari mattered this year at any stage of the season.
Not really
been relevant.
There was sprint win in China that was followed by a disqualification, a double DQ for different reasons in the Grand Prix that matters more. And other
first
than that,
F1 history.
That's about it. There was the Hamilton photo shoot when he arrived at Maranello. Other than that,
Lewis Hamilton.
Charles Leclerc kicking and screaming and scratching and clawing to what he can in this car, in the setup of the team that's fourth in the Constructors' Championship behind a team that only has one driver capable of scoring points on a regular basis? Nah, there ain't much right home out here.
No. And, like, we hear the rumblings out of the team that the technical team are angry with Charles for complaining about the car. The operational team are angry at Lewis. Well, do a better job then. Lewis Hamilton had a photo shoot outside of Enzo's personal fucking house next to an F40. You don't do that unless you're trying to send a message.
Right, and that's the point that I was going to get at here. John Elkann has pumped a boatload of money into this deal, right? Allegedly, Hamilton's on $40 million a year base salary, and allegedly a whole lot more towards Mission 44, which, again, great charitable cause, but we all know how billionaires treat charity and philanthropy. Write-offs. Call it what it is, right? So he's dumped a lot of money into Lewis. And let's be frank, if Carlos Sainz was still here at Ferrari, I'm not convinced he'd be 70 points behind Charles Leclerc through most of the season. And I'm not saying Sainz was perfect, because he wasn't, right? No. But I suspect Sainz would be a bit closer to what Charles Leclerc is right now. He's one of the best drivers in the world than Lewis Hamilton is. John Elkann is a billionaire, and I know for a fact that billionaires only think about the bottom line. He's dumped a boatload of money into Lewis, and he is not getting a return on that investment, because no one, and you do not take a photo shoot in front of Enzo Ferrari's fucking house with 8 open windows expecting Lewis Hamilton to be 6th in the championship. That's not what anyone signed up for here. No. I refuse to believe any other suggestion.
He has one top five in the last 10 races.
That's not good enough. I'm not saying that the Ferrari isn't a donkey to some degree, because yes, the technical side has got to own a fair degree of this. Yeah. But this is not what you signed Lewis Hamilton to do. And Lewis, and look, I know Lewis will absolutely take his fair share of accountability. Finnis will be the first person to tell the media, I screwed up. But this, like, again, this is a man who turns 41 in January, and he's walked into the lion's den of the most high-pressure environment in Formula One, and one of the best and fastest drivers we've ever seen across the garage. I'm not sure what people were anticipating for, but this scenario was a lot more likely than him walking into Maranello and being a title contender.
That, especially when, like, and we heard all of last year during his last season with Mercedes, which outside of the wins was really not all that much to write home about. Like, that, oh, he's checked out of Mercedes, and then the first half of this year, it's always getting used to the car and the team. Well, it's not actually, it's gotten a little bit better, but in that 10 race span, he's outperformed Charles once.
This is round 22 of Lewis in this car. How much longer? I mean, don't get me wrong. I fully agree with people when I say that, Lewis Hamilton is the greatest F1 driver of all time. He's number one on my list and deservedly so. If you are the so-called greatest of all time, I'm not entirely convinced that you need an entire season to adapt to this car. And I don't think that's an unfair statement at this point. You've not had a podium finish in 22 Grand Prix of this team. Charles Leclerc has 7. There is no excuse. None. I'm sorry. There just isn't any at this point. If you're still one of the 5 best drivers in the world, you should have had a podium by now. And right now, I can't get there because Max has been brilliant. You know, George has been outstanding this year. Charles has been outstanding this year. And hell, the McLarens have had their moments, but they've generally been very good this year.
Well, yeah, they won the Constructors' Championship with, like, months to spare. I think 5 the big rounds one for early. Me is like, you know, this double disqualification prevents them from eclipsing the RB19's constructor total. That's brutal.
They're getting beaten by a one car team, Cam. A one car team.
I mean,
what are we doing?
My big one. If Lewis was going to get a podium at any race this year, it was going to be Silverstone. He got gapped by Nico Hülkenberg in a Sauber.
I thought Lewis Hamilton was about to break all of our hearts. I was saying at the time we watched it, Hulkenberg's got no chance. We are all getting our hopes up for nothing. And then he actually went and did it and held him off. And that's the closest that Lewis Hamilton has been to the top 3 steps of the podium since.
It's not good enough. There is one good thing about Ferrari right now, and he wears number 16. And that's about it right now.
Best pit crew. Yeah, they won the DHL Best Pit Stop Award
early.
Good for them.
Good for them. Only about, you know, 8 years too late to help Sebastian Vettel win a title. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, like, it's enough frustration. I mean, like, the other thing that I thought was interesting about this weekend, is it just me or did this year's Vegas Grand Prix feel a bit flat?
It was a lot less than what I expected. I expected a very good race coming off of last year, which was highly entertaining. I don't know if this was just TV direction or not, but it definitely didn't feel like there was as much zest to it. Max Verstappen did his part, for sure. There's no question about that. It definitely felt like we were missing a lot of the action we had last year, but this was a weird weekend where there was not a lot of grip on track because of the weather. Small sample size. I haven't given up hope on the Vegas Grand Prix just yet. Although it was very funny seeing all the Mickey Mouse-like shots with the podium finishers. They ride up in the pink Cadillac and not the fake taxi that they rode in last year.
I think it's more like the event. Like, it feels like we're a few years into this event and it just there's no real novelty to it. You go to Vegas, you know what you're expecting when it comes to the extracurricular activities beyond just the race. The race looked like it was going to start off pretty good, and then Max kind of put an end to that.
Like it's he did his job.
It's just a few signs that worry me. The stuff that I noticed and was told, I had a good friend of mine, one of my ex-colleagues at the Motorsport Network who was working for Sky over the weekend freelance, said the whole thing felt a bit flat this year. You got to remember, this Grand Prix was not popular with the locals. They were not keen for this. They were not keen on $2,000 grandstand seats. They were not keen on their views being blocked off left, right, and center. They were not keen on a $320 million facility being built in the middle of the strip and effectively splitting the city in two in turn it came to transport links and harming potential local businesses. And the Vegas Grand Prix, in their defense, they have pivoted. They've generally sold cheaper tickets since.
Yeah.
Tickets were still available for this race the week of. I know for a fact there were people on the mailing list that were getting bombarded with emails for last minute offers to get the grandstand seats filled. Apparently it was free to get in on Friday and Saturday because of the lack of people in the grandstands on practice and qualifying.
Could you imagine that the first year where we had the fiasco with the drain cover coming off and people who had bought their very expensive tickets being told that they could not come?
Well, funny you mention that, RJ, because we had FP2 interrupted by what we thought was a loose drain cover, and then we red flagged it, and then we put it back out. And then we had to red flag it and end the session again. And then they had to fix 14 different drain covers around the track that were not properly welded.
We're in the United States of America. How have we not figured this out?
We do not have enough runtime on any of our computers to cover that.
It's not a good sign when, before the race started, they put up the attendance as, quote, sold out, rather than put out a straight number. That is not a good... Now, don't get me wrong.
Remember the race... remember the McLaren P1 around the Nordschleife?
Yes.
They've said it's gone around in under 8 minutes. Under 7 minutes.
Right.
They must have lost the piece of paper.
Oh, yes. Richard Hammond ate it. Yes.
Certainly wasn't Jennifer Clarkson.
No, the fact that it said sold out rather than giving out a number was, for me, quite telling. Now, don't get me wrong, Race did very well TV-wise, 1.5 million on ESPN.
That's really best good.
They've had, best they've
NASCAR
had
since wishes they
went
they
to Vegas.
Have some of those numbers. I know IndyCar certainly does.
It looks like them going back 2 hours actually was a good thing for them because it got more people in. Because they did 900,000 last year when they were at basically, I think it was 1 a.m. Eastern. So at 11 o'clock, they did 1.5 mil. But I do think the gloss has worn off a little bit. And I think this is now going to be the true test for Formula One to see if Vegas is a hard sell. Because they initially did a 10-year agreement on this to have this race on the calendar. This was year 3, and I suspect they had difficulty filling the stands up on this one a lot more than they did the first 2 years. I don't know how much goodwill was harmed because of that incident with the manhole cover in year 1, or how much of it is just the general, oh, it's the third time around we're doing this now, and it's just not going to be as exciting in general. I don't know where that stops and where other issues may start, but you got to remember, this was not a popular round locally to begin with, let alone potential other drawbacks. Something that certainly is going to be worth keeping an eye on in the coming years going forward.
Yeah, absolutely, and especially it's Formula One's best interest to make sure this works, because they are also the promoter of the Las Vegas Grand Prix.
Yeah, it's directly in their own pockets. They spent $500 million on this. They're going to have to be the ones to figure this out, basically. Should we talk about the breaking news story of the day?
Yes.
My favorite tweet on the matter from at Not Fifth Gear. Adrian Newey, the second he felt Christian Horner might be employed again.
Ross Brawn. Look at me. I'm the captain now.
That's right. Adrian Newey, now team principal of Aston Martin at the start of next year as a part of an extension of his role as managing technical partner. Andy Cowell, who spent the last year as team principal and CEO, will become the chief strategy officer, focusing on optimizing the pretty technical partnership between the team and just Squire Honda.
Direct technical liaison with Honda. Kind of like, if you don't know, kind of like Gordon Murray's role at McLaren at the end of the 80s is very similar.
It's the first time Adrian Newey has ever held the TP role.
It's not weird. The funny thing about this is, right, this story first dropped, and again, full credit to Andrew Benson at the BBC. He does some excellent reporting. He gets stories that nobody else can seem to get sometimes. It happened right when the Grand Prix was over, and I don't think anybody noticed until yesterday when it started to gain more traction as to what was going on. But they published this on BBC Sports website minutes after the Grand Prix was over. And basically, it goes into a lot of detail. So much so, I'm in one of two minds. Either number one, this was always going to happen and it was inevitable. Or two, there's been some serious shithousery going on for Benson to weave this kind of story. Because the report goes into a lot of detail about, essentially, Cowell and Newey were struggling to coexist. They were struggling to figure out who was in charge. There was talk about how Newey left Red Bull because of the Christian Horner sexting scandal, allegedly sprinkled the allegedly in the chat, etc. And to the point where Newey couldn't be seen in the same room as him, but apparently they've now since reconciled and even went to an Oasis concert together during the summer. Don't look back at me, indeed.
Maybe they were inspired by the Gallagher brothers. Next, Christian Horner's going to whip a guitar at Adrian's head.
My brother said the exact same thing. It was like, there's nothing that brings together half-drunk white people together like an Oasis reunion. It's like imagine a half-drunk Horner going to Adrian. Yeah, I love you, man. I love you too.
Well, don't look back in anger. Plays in the distance.
Oh, as you say, etc. Like, and they're just arm in arm. Like, it's a little bit. I mean, knowing what we know about these stories, it's a little bit jarring knowing that if what Benson is saying is true, that Adrian Newey maybe didn't have the stones that we expected him to. But it is a little bit jarring that Aston Martin's strategy has almost become, let's get the band back together. Because the moment these Horner stories dropped, Newey becomes team principal. Like, hang on a minute.
I just don't know what to make of it. I think it's a surprising use of Newey's time, given he has always been direct in the design process.
Yeah.
Not always being the one drawing the car up, but certainly the one vetting everyone else's processes by in the last few years at Red Bull.
Oh, sure.
And now he will be running the show in addition to being technical partner, whereas Andy Cowell is now in the position that I figured he would have ended up in the first place, which is working with engine partnership, because he was
the engine
one of the driving forces behind the Mercedes turbo hybrid V6. He led that project. We know that project turned out pretty good back in 2014. Just a small matter of the most dominant engine in like the history of Formula One.
That engine won 8 constructors championships and
won this year, just not in the back of their own car.
Exactly. His legacy is going to be one of those dudes you'll remember as like maybe a fringe guy, but someone when you talk about the dominance of Mercedes, you cannot talk about it without mentioning his name.
He now is the liaison from that team to Honda. In theory, combining what the work that is done at Team Silverstone with the work that's being done over in Japan.
I find this very interesting in the sense of Adrian Newey might be the best prepped first time team principal in Formula One history. First and foremost, yeah. For me, I can sum this up in a sentence, and I mentioned this in a few places already. You don't give Adrian Newey £25 million a year in base salary, an ownership stake in the team, a seat on the board, and full technical reign over the entire process of the building of the car, and then hire somebody else to tell him what to do. For me, that is a blatant case of, look at me, I'm the captain now. This was always Adrian Newey's team. And
he got the back pay from what he wanted at Williams 30 years ago.
And this is the point. Adrian Newey has always had an incredibly holistic approach to the entire technical process. He wants a hand in everything because it's effectively his unit. He basically had this power when he was at Red Bull, and Christian Horner was like, it's all yours, buddy. Here's a workshop with all the boards and pencils you can think of. Do whatever you like, as long as our cars turn out good. That's as much power as a technical delegate has ever had in a Formula One team. Ever.
It's the thing that McLaren refused to allow him to have, the thing that made him leave McLaren.
Yeah.
Because Martin Whitmarsh puts in a system to basically blunt Newey's power within the team. And now he's running the whole show, but he's the holistic technical guy. Is he the guy? He's now going to be talking to the media. He's now going to be in the boardroom. He runs the whole show. We're just going to have to wait and see what they produce next year. Is this the best use of Adrian Newey's time?
I don't know. I mean, I think
that's the right answer. We don't know.
We've never seen this before. Like, Adrian Newey has had an incredible amount of clout, and deservedly so. He's the greatest technical mind, arguably, in Formula One history. He's never actually directly ran a team. I think the general sentiment now is you want an engineer on the front line now. Because, I mean, for example, look at Haas with Ayoko Matsu. He's done a fantastic job in that team for the last 2 years.
Red Bull with Mekies this year.
Yeah, Red Bull with Lauren Mekies, again, technical guy at the front. Matteo Bonotto at Ferrari, that one didn't quite work out the same way.
That is proof that it's not always the right call.
I'm not saying it's always the right call, but it's the way the sport has gone in the last decade or so, is that now people are putting more technical-minded dudes on the front line to ultimately run the team. If anything, Aston Martin's probably a little bit late to the trend. Yeah. But what I will say on top of that is, Newey's going to run this from the top down, and he's going to have his people in the right place. I suspect, personally, we'll see a lot more of Andy Stevenson, a sporting director, doing the media, talking to people. When Toto Wolff doesn't want to talk to people, he puts Bradley Lord up front to do the talking instead. And he's done that because Bradley Lord's got, 20-plus years in communications. That's his background. That's his career. I think we'll be seeing a lot more of that kind of infrastructure, where he's going to have a clear set of dudes below him or around him in his circle to cover a lot of the bases, so Newey can focus on what he does best, and that is overseeing the development of the car. But like I said, I think he's the best prepared team principal in Formula One history. Whether that works out or not remains to be seen, because I need to point something out here. This is going to be the fourth team principal that Aston Martin has had in 4 years, going back through Mike Crack, Andy Cowell, and Otmar Szafnauer. If Dean didn't know any better, and let's not forget, Aston Martin are currently eighth in the Constructors' Championship right now, and under a lot of pressure under Adrian Newey to have a Banzai car as the official Honda factory team. I think Aston Martin needs to cut out some of this background noise, because if you didn't know any better, you'd think this was Alpine.
Hey, you remember?
That's my point. That you might be installing Adrian Newey to run the whole show, and that is the most glamorous headline you can have as far as F1 team personnel. That also screams to me that this is a team in flux.
Hey, remember that? Remember that other reunion that's happening next year between Fernando Alonso and Honda?
A GP2 engine. Finally, GP1 engine.
All I'm saying is, if you're going to build a super team, I'm not sure that's going to work unless Max Verstappen is coming, especially if you're trying to get the band back together.
Yeah, put Horner in, a desk job, get Max, and then it's basically a Red Bull regen.
That's what it feels like. And I'm not sure if that's going to work in an entity other than Milton Keynes. I'll give Lawrence Stroll this.
Holy shit, it's Green Bull all over again.
Like, literal Green Bull this time. I mean, let's put it this way. I, for one, am very glad that for now, Christian Horner is not back in an F1 paddock, right? But at the same time, if there's one thing we know about Aston Martin and Lawrence Stroll, to his credit or to his detriment, he will cut a check if he thinks it will make his team better. He will do it.
Other than to replace his son.
But that's the whole point. It's that his son has the best chance of winning.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Right
when suddenly Gabby Bortoletto climbing over the back of his car.
I will say this about Lawrence Stroll as a billionaire, and normally I'm very critical of billionaires. Here's what I will say. He's an incredibly loving father. That's a compliment.
Raptor in the chat, by the way, paraphrasing me, I never thought I'd see the day. Lance Stroll, get the fuck out of my race car. Damn, he's learning.
I think we're all just done on him, man. I think... And I certainly had my high hopes, but that's another tangent for another day. What else we talk about here? We got a bit.
Dorian Pan,
F1 Academy champion in her second season. Very happy for her, but now the question is, what comes next, right? Because F1 Academy is done. She's done her 2 years, and she's won the championship. That is over. They had a third-year clause, but none of the girls that are grandfathered into that. It's for the next crop of drivers. So what happens next?
Need to point out that third-year clause kicks in from 2027 once Cadillac joins the grid. There was a news bar that dropped about a couple of weeks ago that we didn't feature on the show that they said that the Cadillac are committing to the F1 Academy. There'll be two more cars on the grid in 2027. And that also from that year onwards, there will be a potential third-year exemption at the series discretion for women that they reckon could do with, quote, further development potential, essentially, is what it boiled down to. Now,
what this is, an entry-level formula championship.
Mm.
Dorian Pan, we have seen Dorian Pan race against full professionals in a much higher stakes environment in LMP2 and in GT3 racing. She has also done Formula Regional. She had a back out of this season, though. She might come back and do a third season of it. She might come back to the realm of sports cars, which would be easier if we knew if Iron Lynx and Iron Dames were coming back. And that situation seems to ebb and flow every single week. And as of the recording, it's starting to, unfortunately, trend downward.
It's not been good news. Yeah, it looks like the potential options have been getting narrower rather than wider in the last few weeks we've been talking about this. I did a video short talking about this, and I feel like I'm almost like the bubble burster to a degree talking about this, because I don't like being that person. Because I'll say clearly on the record, Dorian Pan is an extremely likable young woman. She's incredibly humble. She's incredibly charming. There is a reason why there is such a strong following around her. She is a great story of being undersized, small, getting into racing late, and actually building a decent career for herself as a sports car driver before switching to single seaters a couple of years ago. But I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago on the website. Check out the blog section if you want to read more on that. But I can't help but think we're in a similar situation as to what the W Series was a few years ago when that ultimately folded. What's next? And the reason I say what's next is that this feels like the end of a chapter for the F1 Academy, because a lot of their high-ranking women are not going to be in the series next year. Chloe Chambers, who won the final feature race, very quick driver, she's not going to be there next year. Maya Wug, who's done her 2 years in the academy, she's going to be going. Leah Block has already said she's going back to rallying. She's done with single-seaters, and she's heading back to her comfort zone in series as well. There's others in there, like Tina Houseman and Chloe Chong, who's done their 2 years and are now moving back to figure out what's next for them. I can't help but be concerned that the F1 Academy feels more like a marketing exercise than it does a serious attempt to push these women up the ladder. Now, don't get me wrong. this shit is not cheap. An F3 seat is going to set you back about €1 million, probably a little bit more than that right now. And, well, if Formula One is only just now opening up a prize pool for its own Formula 3 series on the road, the Academy hasn't got a chance. They're already paying like over $2 million a year just to have half the bill for the cars. Like, they've already opened up a lot of their wallets to this. What I'm concerned is that, and this is me being the bubble burster, Dorian Pan was not good in Frecca. Dorian Pan did a year and a half in the series. Yes, she had a rib injury. The real reason why she pulled out of Frecca was because Prema were not supportive of the fact that her best result in the series was 14th. And that was after 20... Yeah, like, it's... She's had 24 starts in Frecca. Her best result was 14th. That's just not going to cut it, especially if you're with Prema, who we all know are title town. The expected excellence in the junior scene.
At least at that level. Once you get up the ladder, suddenly it's not looking so great.
So, for me, in my opinion, a third year of Frecca is a waste of everyone's time. Prema are not going to get much more out of her than what they've got right now. And quite frankly, if you need 3 years to get out of Frecca, you are sadly probably not good enough to climb any higher up that ladder. Like, I was going to say the same if Maya Wug won the title. She was the other major contender going into the finale. She's already been in Frecca. She was there in 2023. She was better than Dorian. Well, at least she was a semi-regular point scorer. But Frecca's a waste of time. And the thing is, right, what concerns me is Mercedes are rightly promoting the shit out of Dorian right now. Mm-hmm. Social media buzz all over the place. She was on Times Square last evening promoting her championship win. Fantastic. Cool as shit. She's been on Jimmy Kimmel before. Like, she's a bankable personality. But what is the next chapter? Because if, for me, I don't think it's a great look that Marta Garcia won a Frecca seat, was one and done, and is now with the Iron Dames. Abby Pullin dominated the series last year and was 10th in GB3 this year. Again, a lesser series than what Frecca is on the ladder. And now, if Dorian wins, Dorian's now won this title. If she's not doing another year of Frecca, which I don't think is the right move for her, is it a great advertisement for the F1 Academy that a champion is going back to sports cars? It means you failed. Because that's not what you set out to do when you promoted the series, RJ. You know what I mean? It's
right. a bad look for everybody involved. You want this to be the pathway to Formula One. You want this to be at least the first step on that pathway to F1. And I understand why it's there, but I just got a feeling like, is anything ever going to be good enough to satisfy some people?
I don't know, man.
It will only take a woman having the same career trajectory, like verbatim, as an Andrea Antonelli to please some people.
And don't get me wrong, there are a lot of people who evaluate junior talent on a stupidly high scale to the point where anything less than an S-tier Piastri or Antonelli level prospect is good enough for Formula One. That is not the case. It has never been the case, and it doesn't need to be the case. However, if we were evaluating Dorian Pan via the conventional ladder, I fear she would be another Sophia Flores, who has always had this arrogant attitude of doing, of quote unquote, doing it the right way. And look, I don't agree with her attitude, and I don't agree with how she's always punched down on the people that have tried taking opportunities, genuine opportunities, to promote themselves or promote the series they're in. If there's one thing I do agree with her on, it feels at its harshest like a pink washing exercise. And that's what I'm worried about what this series could be. And I don't want it to be that. I want it to be better than that. But right now, the signs are not good. Is that fair to say?
It's fair to say. I guess it's just like, and I know, perspective of three dudes sitting around a podcast and everything.
I know.
What needs to be changed here to fix this sort of thing? And how long will that positive change come down the road? Because we were talking about, it's just like, we're going to throw so many young girls at the wall of this category in single-seaters that ultimately don't make it, probably before we do find the next Giovanna Amati or Layla Lombardi who actually makes it to Formula One. But how long is that going to take? 10 years? 15? 20? I don't want to be 6 years old and darn near with health conditions before I see any turnaround.
That, and I think that's inherently the problem. There's no sexy way of fixing this. And F1 Academy has gone for the sexy method. Because look, this is the reality of the situation. There is a better chance of me marrying Salma Hayek than there ever will be of American Express, Puma, or Lego sponsoring a junior car in Formula 2 or Formula 3. Those sponsors know that is dead money. Right?
Yeah.
Like, but we're getting it in the academy, and there's a reason for that, because they're using it to recoup the money they've lost. You need a serious chat with Stefano Domenicali and say to him, are you prepared to commit to 10 years for this, and are you prepared to lose $25-30 million? Because for me, the attitude needs to go to the very bottom. You need to be going to karting level. And I think, to be fair, we're seeing the first steps of that with Albon Larson, who had a very good first season in the academy. You may have seen the news in the week that Ella Häkkinen is part of the McLaren Driver Academy now, as is Ella Stevens. They are coming straight out of karting. This is the ideal next step for those karters, is being in an F4 car. For me, that's good. That's the next step. For me personally, I think you need to go deeper. I think you need to go into karting, and I think you need to go into schools to convince young girls that motorsport is not this male-dominated industry and that there is a viable path for young girls to get involved in karting and racing. The problem is you can't sex that up and put it on TV, and you can't really do much beyond social media clout as to how that progress comes about. This is going to be a cultural shift. It's going to be a generational cultural shift. And that's going to take time, money, and not chasing clout.
Yeah. And that's the problem. Yeah, that's the problem. Especially when karting is like, that's the first hurdle where so many young people's motorsport dreams go to die. There is a risk there that that could just mean you throw more young women's motorsport dreams to die at the first hurdle if you flood it at that level.
And that's the problem. We're probably going to, it is likely, I mean, best case scenario, this is probably a 10-year plan.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of women that are going to be decent racing drivers in other series. Like I said it before, people like Chloe Chambers, people like Ella Lloyd, Alicia Palmowski, Maya Wood, these are decently talented women that will do great in other series. I have no doubt about that in my mind. But unfortunately, the churn is going to have to go through many more of that sort of talent level before we get someone like a Danica Patrick, who can race at the very highest level.
And say what you will about what Danica Patrick has become, she made it to the top steps of her profession, right? It's going to be a while. Not every young woman has a father who is an iconoclast in the national racing scene that is willing to put them into a single-seater car 3 to 4 years before they should be ready. And it actually worked out to some degree.
Like I said, there's no nice way of doing this. There's no, you know, there's
no instant gratification.
No, this is going to take time, money, and commitment. And it's going to take 10, 20 years. If Stefano is serious about this and trying to address that balance, and I don't think he's not being serious, I just think the amount of effort needed has been misdirected and arguably put in the wrong areas. I'm not out to hate the F1 Academy. I could see what it's trying to do, right? But the W Series died for a reason. And it was $7 million in the hole. And the part of the reason that was because you were probably targeting the wrong areas. It didn't know what it wanted to be between an F1 feeder series and a place for women to race safely and earn some cash to race elsewhere.
Yeah,
I'm not sure you can have that both ways. That's the fear that I have in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, it's tough. I hope Dorian, Maya, Abby, Ella, all of them find something nice to do that next couple of years.
They're good drivers. I need to point that out.
Yeah, absolutely. How long is this going to take, Dre? And I know,
we're in our mid-30s. We will probably be best-case scenario in... Well, Cam's the baby here, but like I said, I think best-case scenario, this is for the next generation. This is going to be, I think, a 10 to 15-year plan at best.
Don't end it on a downer here, folks, because we got Kinsfarnetz. We have a 25-lap limit on tires for the weekend because the curbs at Qatar are so jagged. They're concerned about safety. Yet again, we can have a debate about Pirelli not being able to build tires that are up to task. We could debate about whether the circuit is up to task.
Year five of F1 at Qatar, and we're still having this conversation.
And, of course, the title fight, which is close, but it's not really, as we've elaborated on before.
Yeah, for those who need a little bit more help on the mouse, one more time, Lando Norris, to win the championship this weekend, he has to outscore both Piastri and Verstappen by 2 over the course of the weekend, or 1 point if he wins the Grand Prix, because Norris cannot lose... Yeah, Norris cannot lose the tiebreaker if he wins in Qatar, because he will have at most as many wins as Piastri, and he has a lot more second places than Piastri. I think it's 8-3 in Norris's favor, and Max can't beat him on wins if Lando takes the win in Qatar, because Max has 6 wins to Lando's what would be 8 if he was to win the Grand Prix with 1 round to go. So effectively, 2 points on both for the title, 1 point if he wins the Grand Prix on top of that, because that means Norris can't lose on a tie. It's effectively an extra point, even though it technically isn't. Math! Isn't that fun? I think it's annoying that we're talking year 5 of Qatar on the calendar now, filling in as party favors for an F1 calendar that's over bloated, and we're still talking about tire safety. Pirelli knows what they've signed up for with Qatar at this point. Why are we still doing this? I know we're using a MotoGP track and that's inherently stupid, but how have you not figured this out by now?
Were we supposed to have a purpose-built street course to replace this by now already? But that didn't happen.
I think F1 oomed and ahed on the agreements on that one, and I think that's why Qatar didn't commit to something like that.
Especially now we got Rotterdam concept.
Yeah, just a touch. That is now currently being built as we speak.
Less said about the Madrid prospects, the better.
Oh boy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think it's going to be a very even fight. I think qualifying is going to be huge for Qatar. Whoever leads going into turn one is going to have a significant advantage. It's a bitch to follow around here. It's hard to pass in Qatar outside of turn one. And I think it's a coin flip between Lando and Max. I think whoever takes pole is going to have a significant advantage. But I will still give Lando a very good chance of wrapping it up this weekend. Because really, if he wins the Grand Prix, unless he gets taken out in the sprint as well, that clinches. So that's my take on it. I think there's a lot more ways for me that Lando wraps this up than Max takes it to Abu Dhabi. As the sicko, I would love to see a decider, even if it's a long shot decider. But I've got a feeling Lando wraps it up here. This is McLaren. In my opinion, this is one of McLaren's strongest tracks. So we'll see how we go.
I got to bank on Verstappen being strong here. As Cam pointed out, he has not lost Grand Prix in Qatar since they've started going here. And it would also be familiar for under Max Verstappen. Rules. Yeah, under these
rules.
He didn't
win in 2021.
Yeah, that's true. Max Verstappen would love an Abu Dhabi decider. Things just end a little bit strange.
Max has always ended the year strong. He's always gone well in Qatar. As I said, he's unbeaten, and he's always gone well in Abu Dhabi. So, you know, he needs...
Other than last year.
I've used the analogy before. Max was at the snookers required stage 2 rounds ago. He's actually got one back via Vegas. He probably needs one more before he can start thinking about winning the frame and match. We'll see how that goes. That'll be next week on Motorsport 101 as our full Qatar review. And of course, it could be an Abu Dhabi title decider preview. We'll have to find out next week. Also, again, tune back in for our MotoGP season review next week as well. Looking forward to that. But until next time, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell and Cameron Buckley. Hope to see you next week. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Put the fries in the bag, McLaren.
Ayumu Wasa, that boy nice. Wish it was leading anywhere to F1.
That boy I'm gonna
take one more quick note to get one more outro bit going. We've always been a big fan of him on this show. Sylvain Guintoli announced yesterday he's going to be running the London Marathon in his racing levers next year for 2026. For those who don't know, he tragically lost his son as a result to cancer earlier this year, Luca. In tribute to him, he'll be running the London Marathon in his racing levers. I'll put a link to where you can donate in the description. We've always loved Ginters on this show, former World Superbike champion and one of the few bright spots in bike racing, one of the few genuinely good dudes in this game. Please, if you can, donate. Thank you for listening. Take care.
Hell yeah. Bye.
Hope he hydrates.